Hi, Simon Hill here. Enjoy our podcast? If you'd like to help us keep delivering the sort of quality football chat you want, then you can show your support by making a donation. Big or small, however much you can afford, we appreciate all your help, and every cent will be ploughed back into improving production. Thanks in advance from all of us at Shim, Spider, and so much more.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Corner kick. Celtic couldn't handle Wood on the set piece. It's a brilliant header. And Cahill goes to spectacle. What about that? What about that? Here's Aloisi for a place in the World Cup.
For us.
He's yeah! Gone. Australia got it.
You're with Shim, Spider, and so much more. Take it away, fellas.
Hello again. Welcome along for your weekly dose of Shim, Spider, and so much more. Episode 40 features a great chat with Socceroos legend Mila Jedinak in the final part of the show. Before then, we'll be shaking down the Super League war in Europe and discussing another goal-laden round of A-League fixtures, all in the company of Jelko Kalats and Craig Moore. Good to see you, boys. Maury, the rumour is that Canberra is in the frame for a license in the A-League 2022-23. Have you heard anything? You're supposedly involved with that particular franchise?
Mate, very good question. I'm going to give you a very honest answer. I've been here now for 7 months. And apart from the stories and some conversations early doors about the possibility of Canberra coming into the A-League, I've had zero communication in the time that I've been here.
Well, that's frustrating. So I guess you don't know.
I've got to be honest.
No, well, it's better that you're honest. That's what this podcast is all about. Spider, I'm hoping you're going to be honest. Your big mate Popper is taking over at Melbourne Victory. Does that mean you're coming home?
I've got to be honest with you. I don't know. So I've got to. If Maury's being honest, then I'm being honest as well. I actually don't know. But what a great appointment for Melbourne Victory. And I think it's a really good job for Popper. Mate, they're a big club ready to get repaired, and they've got the right man for the job.
Yeah, I think most people would agree with that. Before we move into hard talk, just a little word on an article that appeared this week regarding myself. The article said I was considering leaving Australia, and many have taken this to mean that I've made that decision. That is not the case. I just responded to a question on a podcast, to be honest, fairly honestly, as we're in the mood for honesty at the start of this podcast. The truth of the matter is this: a new TV deal is imminent. It will probably be a 2 or even 3 year deal. If it stays where it is, of course, then my time here is done. I can't afford to stay without full-time work, nor would I want to. If it goes somewhere else, then yes, I'd be interested if they're interested in me. If they're not, then so be it. And yes, I'll be done here and no complaints. I've had a good run. So that is the truth of it. And I probably opened up a little because the time for those decisions is fairly close. Many wrote to me on Twitter and said some nice things. So thank you. Others might be glad to see the back of me. That's fair enough as well. Broadcasting is quite divisive. I didn't intend my answer to be any sort of public announcement. I'm not trying to make it all about me. I was just asked a question and I answered it as truthfully as I could. And what I really want is for the game to have a better future than it has at the moment. The good news is we should all see that future very soon and we can all get on with life one way or the other. All right, let's get into it then. Hard talk.
Hard talk.
Heart Talk is brought to you by Streamgates, one of Australia's first live streaming companies operating since 2008. They focus on virtual and hybrid events, broadcasting to unlimited online audiences worldwide by either a secure private stream page or publicly on social media. Live streaming allows social online engagement as viewers are able to communicate back to the presenters in real time while social distancing. So should you require a small personal event or business level webcast, please go to streamgates.com.au or you can find them on Instagram. So guys, let's start with the A-League in that crazy game on Friday night, which ended 5-4 to Melbourne Victory against the Western Sydney Wanderers just days after they confirmed Tony Popovich would take over next season. They nearly threw it away. But what to make of the Wanderers, Spider? What's happened to their form?
All I know is that both coaches would have had heart palpitations. The supporters, one supporting group would have been ready to leave the stadium. The other ones were celebrating, thinking it was all over. And then with a couple of minutes to go, the poor Victory supporters were going, what the hell is going on here? Not again. I don't know what the... Maury?
Nah, Spire, I'm just thinking. One of our great mates, Kevin Musker, obviously was at Melbourne Victory, and the type of club Melbourne Victory were, in five seasons, Champions League, four of those seasons, three grand finals, two grand finals they won, and one of those grand finals they lost on penalties. That's the club that is Melbourne Victory. But they're a long, long way off, and I know that Popper will come in and will do a fantastic job, and that's a level that I'm sure he can get to again. Spider, I think that with Popper coming into Melbourne Victory, the ability to be able to attract the right player to this football club is going to be key to them moving forward very, very quickly. Western Sydney Wanderers, I mean, for the neutral, it was a wonderful game to watch, but it was horrific in terms of the goals that were conceded. You know, Western Sydney Wanderers, I think from three corners, conceded goals. Free headers galore. Game was stretched. A lot of improvements tactically, Spider, I would think.
Maury, it was yucky poo. Like, honestly. 5-4. Mate, it was insane. It was seriously insane. I watched the game and I couldn't believe my eyes as to what I was seeing. You hit the nail on the head. For the neutral, it was, how good's this? 9 goals. But for the football purists, mate, it was a disaster.
Spider, you know Popper very well. He has that infamous little black book that he scribbles in during a game. That will have been full watching that on Friday night, won't it?
Yeah, mate, he'd be meticulously watching those games now. And you know what? The reality is, we all know what it's like when a new manager comes in. And now that they've heard that Popper's coming in, these guys need to perform if they want to be at the club next year. That's the reality. I mean, it's a big club. We all know it's a big club. Expectations are very high. They need to start performing to get contracts. And you know what? That was a better performance goals-wise, but it was a terrible performance defensive-wise by Wanderers. That was, Maury, it was just one of those games that was unbelievable.
But even Victory, like they're 5-1 up, well, I think at 72 minutes, and then for that to end up 5-4, it's like you're going, like I said, for the neutral, amazing. For anybody that's got any football now watching that game, they're going, oh my God, such poor quality.
Wanderers can't miss the finals again this year, can they?
I'll tell you what, they're in big trouble. They're in big trouble. They're equal 6 at the moment. I had a good look at the table, and the table is very, very tight. They have to shore up their defence. I know they're saying they've got firepower up front, but you cannot leak goals. You can't score 2 and 3 goals every match. It's not possible. Well, in saying not possible at the moment. At the moment in the A-League, it seems it is possible, but in real football, it's actually not possible. And they have to fix that problem up quick, smart, because their squad should be able to make the top 6, Maury. Jeez.
Well, Sydney FC will probably make the top 6, the reigning champions, of course. They had to come from behind twice to earn a point in Gosford. Good resilience shown by them. And again, by the Central Coast, who keep hanging in there. Also good to see a 10,000 crowd in there as well. We haven't seen too many of those this season. A terrific goal from Miloš Ninković. Do we appreciate Ninković enough? We're talking about quality in the A-League. He doesn't get too many headlines in the mainstream, does he, Miloš Ninković? But what a player he still is.
Top player. Top player. One of the best foreigners that we've had come to the A-League. He doesn't get the love in the mainstream because no one's bloody covering the game. That's a problem. But he's a hell of a player. He makes a hell of a difference. His awareness on the football field is unbelievable.
He's cute, those players, and the timing of his goal, obviously. I mean, I think stoppage time, the end of the first half, to give Sydney that opportunity. It's a wonderful ball from Bratton, wasn't it? It's a great ball, but Ninković, when he's in that position, knows how to finish. He's got real quality. Bimby was disappointed with a couple of offside decisions, probably harshly dealt with in the first one, the first disallowed goal, because I believe the defender, which meant Bobo would have been no longer offside. Mm-hmm. The second one, I've probably got no real complaints with. I probably felt that it was offside. I know Ninković was in a starting offside position. And I think Corica come out and said he wasn't overly disappointed with that one. But Bobo, for the first one, he was disappointed with. Urena for Central Coast Mariners. Hasn't he been a fine spider?
He's a good goal scorer. He's a good worker. Look, they're doing well. I actually want to agree with what Simon said. 10,000 people at the Mariners Stadium says one thing. We want the Central Coast Mariners playing out of Gosford. Mate, uh-huh. Well done to everyone who turned up. It was brilliant. And it was a great demonstration of where that club belongs.
Boosted, it must be said, by a fair few Sydney FC fans as well, not to take anything away from those in yellow and navy blue. Just one more on Sydney. News this week that Adam Lafondra is going to return to play in Sky Blue, which I'm sure all Sydney fans are delighted with. That gives them Adam Lafondra, gives them Babo, Costa Barbarousis, Trent Bahaja. They got a fair bit of competition. Who misses out?
He'll just rotate him. He'll rotate him. The opposition defence are going to have their hands full, especially when he puts on the whippets in the 70th minute. You know, say, for example, if he starts with Bobo and Lafondra and you've got Barbarousis and... Bahaja comes on, mate. It's a handful. And you know what? We've spoken about Sydney this year, and they're playing well. The difference between them this year and last year is that when they got a chance last year, they took it. They're needing a little too many chances, Maury, to score. But now, Lafondra coming in, right time of the year, championship needs to be won, strengthen the squad. Good signing. Great signing by Sydney.
Great signing. And look, I mean, you know, sometimes players, when they come back second time around at a football club and all that, it can be hit and miss. But the likes of Bobo's come back and delivered again. I've no doubts that Adam Lafondre will come back and hit the ground running, which you need to at a club like Sydney FC, and especially at this stage of the season. He'll come back and score goals. And Sydney, they're loaded up top, Spides. They're loaded up top. Defensively, they need to be a little bit better, I've got to say, because... You know, I thought McGowan and Wilkinson, you know, probably a little bit average in terms of the goals they conceded and the way that they commit themselves. And you need to be a little bit harder to beat defensively. They need to improve there.
Yeah, but you know what, Maury? You're right, but I'd still hate to play Sydney in a one-off game. I tell you, I still think they're a very, very good side. And things probably, you know, they're making a few little mistakes this year and getting punished for them that in the previous two championships they didn't make or didn't get punished for. So, you know, I still wouldn't want to play them. I still think they'll get to the grand final, get very close with Melbourne City.
And of course, perhaps one of the reasons Lafondra is returning is that they've got one eye on the Champions League, where they're going to need that little bit of depth later on in the year. Talking of Sydney FC, a bit of a set-to between old Sydney teammates, Mark Rudin and Ufuk Talay, regarding refereeing decisions in the Western United Wellington game on the Thursday. Rudin complaining that Talay tries to influence referees a little bit too much, and Ufi responding by saying, well, that's his problem.
Yeah,
so a little love lost between the old teammates.
Brilliant. Just winding each other up. I don't mind. I don't mind that. It was nothing too silly. And they both had a comment. All done and dusted. Shake hands and move on.
And probably had a beer afterward.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. No doubt. It was a weekend also of missed opportunities. MacArthur won, Melbourne City won on Saturday. City missing a bit of a trick, Morey, to extend their lead at the top. A bit of profligacy in front of goal.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, City's definitely had their chances to put this game to bed, to win this game. Metcalf was the main player involved in these opportunities. It was an earlier opportunity where he's had a shot where he probably could have crossed the ball for a tap-in. He obviously gets his goal. He hits a crossbar late on. But Melbourne City will probably see this as a lost opportunity to not get 3 points. But I still think that they're ticking along nicely. Look, MacArthur are hard to play against. They're quite honest, Simon. And certainly for their first season, I think people have got to be pleased in the way that they've performed this season.
So that, Spider, presented the opportunity for Adelaide United to go top of the A-League. But unfortunately for the Reds, they couldn't take it. They lost 2-1 to Wellington Phoenix, who won the game thanks to a late penalty, the award of which for handball was, let's call it, contentious, to say the least. We still don't know where we're at with this damn rule, do we?
Was that a handball or was it the keeper smashing the player on the head?
Sotirio, did he come over the top of Sotirio?
Yeah, Joshy heads the ball and the keeper was a tad late. But not, in all fairness, it's a little bit harsh on the keeper as well because Joshy gets the header away. The keeper's already committed. He can't actually stop anymore. And look, it was a soft... Look, I'm backing the keeper here. It's a little bit of a soft penalty because...
Thought you might.
Because, well, Joshy's already got his header away. So the keeper actually can't stop anymore. But... On chances, it was an entertaining game on chances. Both teams had plenty of chances. But look, I'm happy for Wellington because I actually think they've been playing well. And not that I'm happy that Adelaide lost because they're actually an entertaining side to watch.
And we've got to give special mention to Ben Wayne. What's that? Is that 4 consecutive goals?
Right. Yeah.
In games. Yeah. By the way, it looks a decent. I know I don't like to get too excited too early about young players, and I know he's not an Australian, but he's his movement, you know, the way that he moves about that box and the way that he takes his chances that he has done, for me, he looks a decent talent.
Yeah, and Wellington continued to produce those decent talents in the wake of Liberato Kakache and Callum McCowart and Sarpreet Singh. They've got something going at Wellington that is pretty good at the moment. Brisbane Perth, of course, was postponed, unfortunately, due to the COVID outbreak in WA. So Glory couldn't travel. The news, though, this week that Scott McDonald has left Brisbane. No real explanation as to why. Is that Scott finished in terms of his playing career, do we think? Which would be a pity because he's been a really good asset to the A-League since arriving.
No, interesting one, Simon, because look, Scott McDonald's got a really good relationship with David Poray, but something seems to have gone amiss here. I've not spoken to Scotty, an educated guess that there's been some issues there in terms of with Warren Moon and with Shane Stefanuto. At a guess, you know, the old mutual termination, but all of a sudden, you know, if there's a confidentiality agreement signed, then that tells you there's a problem. But you know, they've got to dust themselves down and both have to move on. Scotty McDonald is a great professional. Whether or not there's more playing opportunity for him in Australia, look, time will tell. But, you know, it's a big loss to the football club because whether it be playing the remainder of this season, I certainly felt there was a future for Scott McDonald at Brisbane Roar in terms of coaching and the academy and all these other kind of things as well.
Does that mean Morey now that he can go to another A-League club? Or not?
I believe he can, Spider, yeah.
Yeah, if they've mutually terminated, I don't see that there's any reason why he shouldn't be able to. But it, of course,
it'd be a good pickup, wouldn't he?
Well, he would be, but it depends whether, you know, he wants to move. Because clearly, he'd have to be interstate because there's no other club in Queensland for him to go to. Anyway, an interesting development. And unfortunate, I think, both for Scott and for Brisbane and for the A-League. Just on Brisbane... The city unveiled the Gabba as its showpiece stadium should the Olympic Games go there in 2032, which would suggest that AFL and cricket are again going to be the two sports that benefit from any redevelopment, just as they did in Sydney 2000, of course. But there was a story that appeared in the Brisbane media this week that Perry Park could be developed as a hockey stadium for the Games and then subsequently provide that boutique venue that Brisbane really needs, Maury. That would be good.
That would be amazing, Simon. Perry Park is situated in a fantastic area that has great access to public transport. That is redeveloped into a hockey situation for the Olympic Games, which is very, very similar in terms of the space that's required for football. We know that hockey, in terms of long-term, there's no future in terms of that kind of capacity and crowd. That would be a wonderful addition for football. And finally, something from, a legacy of an Olympic Games or something like that something actually comes to football.
Let's hope it happens. Still on the Olympics, the Olyroos and Matildas received their draws this week. The Olyroos got Spain, Argentina and Egypt, which looks tough. The Matildas got Sweden, USA and New Zealand, which, let's be honest, isn't that much easier. Are they both groups of death, Spider?
Look, they are groups of death, but I think they're good groups. I think when the Aussie sides played these bigger calibre teams, we sort of have this, we can't win. So they've got nothing to lose. Where I think if they would have got a less quality draw, we would have expected them just to win. So I think they can go in prepared to actually win matches and be brave to play. Hard draws, though.
Graham Arnold calling for vaccinations for the players before they head off to Tokyo. And of course, in terms of the Matildas draw, two of the best third place teams go through. So maybe a second chance for the Matildas, but hopefully they can improve their form as they get towards Tokyo. Just one or two on Aussies abroad, Maury. Matty Ryan, talk of him getting a full-time contract. Actually, has he been offered a full-time contract? And Bernd Leno, of course, produced that horrible howler against Everton. So maybe more chances coming up for Matty.
Yeah, well, look, I'll let Spider speak about the potential Leno howler, which obviously it was. Matty Ryan obviously got his opportunity the week before. And Mikel Arteta said that I've got to give Matty an opportunity because he's an unbelievable professional. He always trains in the right way. And therefore, I've got to give him the opportunity. So, I don't know whether it's true or whether or not he's going to get a contract offer at Arsenal, but he's certainly not done himself any harm by the way that, again, Matty Ryan's an unbelievable professional. The way that he goes in, the way that he works, he'll always give his best. And if he could, have a longer stay at Arsenal or secure a further future at Arsenal, that'd be wonderful for Matty Ryan, but also for Australian football.
Yeah, I think it's a great club for Matty. I really do. I think I said it before he even went there. I couldn't believe it when he actually went there because I think it suits Matty's style. I don't think there's anything between Leno and Matty Ryan, to be honest with you. And, when you're at a big club like that, and I know a lot of people say Arsenal's not a big club. They are a big club. You've got to wait for your opportunity. Leno, at the moment, is number one. That's clear. They can see that. But Matty's just got to keep working and keep believing. And in football, opportunities come when you don't expect them. You just got to be ready to grasp them with both hands.
And he's playing, of course, for his boyhood club. Let's hope it works out for Matty. A big goal for Sam Kerr as well in the FA Women's Super League on Thursday, helping Chelsea to a 2-2 draw against Manchester City in that top-of-the-table clash. Keeps them 2 points ahead of City in the title race. Unfortunately, they did lose the first leg of the Women's Champions League semi-final on Sunday. That was against Bayern Munich, but they still have the second leg to come. Elsewhere, Brad Smith scoring his first goal in 5 years in Major League Soccer. So congratulations to him as well. Time to head overseas then. London Calling.
London Calling.
Go further with the Australian College of Physical Education. With more than 100 years of experience, ACPE's courses are designed to get you career ready. Their bachelor degrees in sports performance and business health science, applied fitness, education and dance can help turn your dream into a career. Find out where ACPE can take you. Apply online today for Semester 1 2021 at acpe.edu.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Well, we sort of touched on the Super League last week in the podcast, but really the story was only just starting to emerge when we recorded last week. So let's chat about it a little bit more in depth. A huge story in the UK and the rest of Europe. We're now into the realms, guys, of club apologies, supporter protests, and talk of potential punishments for those involved. This remains, even though the Super League is off the table at the moment, this remains, doesn't it, the game's biggest crisis, Maury.
This was an absolute shocker, Simon. Talk about playing a really, really poor hand. The football community absolutely jumped down the throats of the Big 12, the Big Six in England, and within 48 hours, the Big Six had withdrawn in England. The protests that have gone on, the rumours and speculation now about the potential purchases of those football clubs, people want these owners out. It's been amazing. You know, the good thing about it is a couple of things. One, this should never go ahead, and I'm glad that got knocked on the head very early. But secondly, the voice and the power of our game, you know, our supporters, and what football is about. I hope that this can potentially show that there is opportunities to cut through racism. And I would love for VAR to be on that agenda as well. But it just goes to show sometimes when you're the power of people, and we were just disrespected, the Big 12, the, you know, people were getting greedy without actually speaking to the fans, without speaking to the coaches, without speaking to the players. These were the people that had to front all the media. And where were the owners?
Good question. They were hiding. Spider, there's a lot of talk, particularly in the UK, that the answer to all of this in the wake of the Super League debacle is the German ownership model, the 50 plus one. The government says it's going to review everything, and that's the 50 plus one will be on the table as well. Is that feasible in a country like England, where it's developed along the lines of complete ownership of football clubs, or can they do it?
To be honest with you, I'm probably the wrong person to be asking this question. You're the person who should be answering this. with what they did in Germany was brilliant, because there was no German club in the Super League, was there?
Correct.
No, but they all knocked it back, Simon. And just on that, I think there's only three German clubs that aren't on the 50 plus one. I think it's Wolfsburg, Bayer Leverkusen, and Hoffenheim, I believe. Hoffenheim. And it's only because ownership has been in place at those clubs for 20 years or greater.
Interesting.
The rest is on 50 plus one. I mean, look, there are some clubs, Simon, in the UK. I mean, Hearts, for example, are a club that are on a membership model. So it'd be interesting to follow and monitor the progress of that. So it does happen. But it'd be interesting to see government getting involved. I think it's a good thing, because what they're actually saying is, we're not happy with the current ownership of our clubs, and we need to look into this.
Somebody did suggest to me on Twitter that if the government got involved, they could actually fall foul of FIFA's rules on government interference, which I guess is true. But it's a very interesting situation that's developing, and I think it's a spectacular own goal from the clubs. They certainly couldn't have expected this, and I think they've brought about some very unwanted scrutiny on the way that they run these massive institutions in Europe and in England in particular. Now, of course, you know, one of the big contentious issues of the Super League was the protected places for the elite clubs, the lack of relegation for the 12 plus three founders. And of course, there are echoes in miniature with the A-League in Australia. A lot of people have pointed out that we have a protected league here, a closed league here. And, you know, maybe it's time we looked at that. I mean, we've been big proponents of a national second division and promotion and relegation, Maury.
Yeah, no, and look, I've popped some tweets out during the week as well, Simon, on that. You know, it's like for the amount of disgust in the football community of what happened or what the Super League tried to do in the game of football was really frowned upon. And I was like, yeah, but that's actually what we have in place in Australia. Mm. Smaller scale, it's a franchise model. You know, you're protected. It's a closed shop. It doesn't create pathways and opportunity for other clubs and the MLS as well. Definitely something for us all to think about, because it just seemed that such a huge majority of people are dead against this.
Hmm. Well, I think it's very much, you know, something that football fans agree on. You have to have opportunity for ambitious clubs, and you have to have punishment for those that fail. Just on the other Premier League clubs in England, Karen Brady said this week in the media, the bonds of trust have been broken between the big six in England and the rest. The rumour is they want the resignation of the chairman and the CEOs of each of the six clubs involved. And this is a direct quote from Karen Brady. I watched them apologise to their fans and wondered where the apology was to their colleagues in the Premier League. All six pretended to be working for the best interests of the EPL, and all the time they were plotting to destroy it. I mean, this is going to create a huge chasm, if it hasn't already, between the big six and the rest. And I can only imagine now what punishment those 14 want, and of course what UEFA wants by extension for potential punishment for the Champions League and European competition, Spider.
What punishment? I don't think anything will happen from it. I don't think they'll get punished in any way. I don't think points will get deducted. I don't even think a fine will happen. I could be wrong. But it was, as Maury said, it was quashed very quickly. And that was fantastic to see. What these other 14 clubs in the Premier League want from these clubs, I don't know, Simon. I really don't know. I can't see anything happening from it, to be honest. That's going to last forever, Maury.
Yeah, no, but it's going to leave a horrible taste in people's mouths forever. I 100% agree with you. What we're starting to see, you know, like the likes of Woodward at Manchester United, you know, potentially was stepping down at the end of the year. Whether that's already been talked about now, that June, July, he'll be out of Manchester United. His involvement again is kind of, people are, you know, it's come out in the papers here that he didn't have any involvement, but then in another story, he was one of the key players. So look, these people, like I says, I think they've played a really, really poor hand. They've been found out. They've realised that this is not going through. Saying that, Perez is coming out saying it's all still in place. it's not this format, but it's another format. So, you know, that's why I think Gary Neville's come out here, Simon, as well, saying, well, that's why we need government to be involved, because we need to protect the game, because this assault's coming again.
Yep, you'd imagine at some point it would re-emerge. In the midst of all this, the new format, Spider, of the UEFA Champions League has almost been lost in the crossfire. A new 36-team league has been agreed with 10 fixtures each. Whether the Big Six and the Big 12 will be involved in it next season, I'm not sure. This comes in, I think, from 2024. Jurgen Klopp said, I've got no idea when the extra games will be scheduled, and that the coaches, players and supporters are never asked. Ilkay Gundogan of Manchester City called it the lesser of two evils in comparison to the Super League. This is a mess, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. All greed, my friend. All greed. Money, money, money.
It's true. Simple as that. And in the midst of it all, Maury, David Moyes coming out and suggesting the unified British League with Celtic and Rangers. Come on, Moyesy. As if we haven't got enough.
I'm back in Scotland now. I come over as a 17-year-old. Mate, I've heard the stories for 25, 30 years about Scotland and Rangers and the British Super League and all that sort of stuff. Scotland and Rangers need to be in Scotland. Simple.
Scotland and Rangers. You left Celtic out there, mate.
Sorry. I didn't do that on purpose. Sorry. Celtic and Rangers need to be in Scotland. It's simple because you take Celtic and Rangers out of Scotland and it would drive a huge hole in the game here. And it's important that they are here. It's important that commercial interest within the game with Rangers and Celtic being here and can improve the pyramid, can improve the other clubs. British Super League's not happening. Shouldn't happen.
All these stories meant that, rather bizarrely, the sacking of Jose Mourinho took a bit of a backseat this week. It's almost a paragraph in the back pages of the papers. Not an ideal build-up for Tottenham to the Carabao Cup final on Sunday against Manchester City, a competition that, of course, is probably threatened by the expanded Champions League or Super League, whichever comes first. City won it in the end by 2-0. Emerick Laporte. Where does all this leave Jose Mourinho? He leaves Tottenham without having won a trophy. The first time that's happened to him in his coaching career. Is he done at the very highest level, Spider?
Is that why they got rid of him before they played this cup
final? Because of the bonus.
to be fair, and Man City belted him. It was one-way traffic. It should have been 4 or 5. He'll find another club because he's a very good manager. I think I know a lot of people think his managerial style and football philosophy is outdated. It's just not outdated. It was probably just at the wrong club. He will bring success wherever he goes next. I don't know where he might go back to someone like Porto, or he might go back to Italy where they maybe appreciate the tactical side of things.
But Spides, I think the question around about Mourinho is not doubting whether or not he's a top level coach. But it's like whether or not he can now go to a top five country with the way that the game is changing. The fans want to be entertained, you know, and Mourinho. Yeah, I look at Ryan Mason and Simon, you would have watched the game. I mean, Man City dominated from start to finish. Different manager, but did Spurs play a different way to what they would have played under Mourinho?
Well, probably not hugely, to be honest. But then, you know, you can't really give Ryan Mason grief for that. I guess he's only been there a couple of days in the job.
No, he's just, you know, I get that. But again, in terms of, you know, a playing style. Mourinho's been linked to Celtic, funny enough. And again, I don't know how much truth there is in that, but the last couple of days in the media here in Scotland, you know, Mourinho has been linked to Celtic as well.
Well, the media will be rubbing their hands with glee at the prospect of Mourinho against Steven Gerrard, hey? Particularly after what happened in 2014.
It'd be amazing, but could they afford him? Because I imagine he's on a few dollars, eh?
Yeah,
but he got to pay. He got to pay out, so it might come a little bit cheaper. It might only cost them $18 million a year.
Wow, good weekend for Manchester City. Leeds drawing with Manchester United, so City now 10 points clear at the top with just 5 games remaining in the Premier League. They need just 2 wins to secure the championship. Big win for Chelsea as well. Of course, both those teams involved in the Champions League semi-finals during the week. Chelsea against Real Madrid, City playing PSG, but a very important win for Chelsea at West Ham, one of their big rivals for the top four, Maury.
Yeah, and look, the talking point from it, look, Chelsea were good enough for the win. You know, probably West Ham, who have had a fantastic season, probably didn't start the game as well as what David Moyes would have liked. They also had the sending off and the VAR situation with Balbuena, which has been hugely debated over here. I don't know whether you've seen the footage of that, you know, where he's going to clear the ball and he's kind of caught, I think, Mason Mount. and he's got sent off. But that's had mixed reviews over here. Probably the last 15, 17, 18 minutes, a man less. But Chelsea have been very good under Tuchel, haven't they? He's done a great job. But at the same time, West Ham have had a fantastic season. But Chelsea very, very strong.
Indeed they are. Okay, let's head into our final segment today and another big guest waiting for us in Footballers' Lives.
Footballers' Lives.
Well, our guest today was born in Sydney in 1984 and started his football career with Sydney United. After a brief spell in Croatia, his journey really began in a professional sense at the Central Coast Mariners. He then headed overseas to Gençlerbirliği, Ligi, Antalyaspor, and most famously, Crystal Palace and Aston Villa, where he retired from playing in 2019. He remains at Villa Park as part of the coaching team. He won 79 caps for Australia and remains the only Socceroo to captain his country at two World Cups. He is, of course, Mila Jedinak, who joins us from his home in the UK. Unfortunately, the first part of our interview with Mila suffered from audio issues. So we're going to pick up the chat during Mila's time with Crystal Palace. Mila, after your spell in Turkey, that sort of laid the platform, I guess, for you to move on to England. You signed for Crystal Palace. Was that always your intention to head to England? Was that your desired destination?
Oh, it was my desired destination, definitely. I just think I couldn't have the opportunity because of the cap situation and passport situation and whatnot. So the story goes, when we did get over, and the initial contact, obviously everyone knows it was from Papa, and we had those conversations whilst we were in Turkey, just seeing what the script was, and the decision was probably made a little bit clearer when we became sort of pregnant at that time with our first child. So we were having those discussions, and we came over to the UK, and we spoke with the staff there, and I ended up one day going up to Glasgow and seeing Maury's old stomping ground and getting a little tour around there, and they were the two experiences I had within that sort of 2 weeks, and in the end that was not the right fit, and I said, you know what, I want to go and do this and try this and give this a really good go. So saying that, but not actually realizing what it would entail.
Well, yeah. It certainly worked out all right for you. I mean, in season 2012-13, you had one of your best seasons. You scored against Peterborough to get Palace into the playoffs, led them to promotion at Wembley as captain, and were also voted player of the season by the club and its fans. That must have been pretty satisfying.
Yeah, listen, my first season was quite difficult. I was managed through Tony and Dougie and the staff there, and I couldn't quite get my head around it, but was soon to quickly realise this is how it gets done over here, because of the ferociousness of the league and how physically strong you need to be and, you know, how ready and prepared. And so I learned that way quite quickly. I picked up an injury towards the end of that year, and it was a really weird sort of summer because Tony had left and I'd had this offer from the Middle East and stuff. And it was just like, right, okay, like what to do, sort of have a little thought process. And in the end, what ended up happening was you have these discussions and you always have this desire in yourself, and I'm going to give this a proper go and see. And in the end, that's what happened. We were still sort of tipped to get relegated and whatnot, but I just, you know, you have that belief and desire, and you have a few around you that are feeling that way, and then they soon start to see momentum, and you start on this, you know, this great journey, and it's up and down, and you know, any promotion season is, especially one that ends in a playoff victory. But what an experience! What an absolute fantastic experience!
Did having Tony Popovich there help, having another Aussie at the club, that he could maybe put an arm around you, understood where you came from, all the rest of it?
I think not that we ever, like I said, you know, Tony was someone I looked up to anyway. It was more of that, developing that sort of friendship and, you know, families and stuff. When it wasn't really football, it wasn't really like that. I wouldn't go to him and ask, you know, all that sort of stuff. That wasn't my thing anyway. I never sort of did that in my career. And, so you know, that was, I could keep that to the side, which I didn't mind. You know, I got to understand that process anyway. And, you know, it was in my best interest that you know, the way that you manage, because that injury probably happens a little bit sooner if it wasn't the case.
In 2016, of course, you led the club out in the FA Cup final at Wembley against Manchester United. I was actually at that game watching it. You could have become the first Aussie to lift the cup as captain, and you came so close. I can see on your face already. Is that the biggest disappointment of your career?
It's up there. It'd be up there. I'd say it'd be up there. In the sense of, like what you said there, you probably know how close you were. And listen, don't take anything away from Manchester United and the team they had that day, but you just got this sense, if we do this right, we could potentially have something. And we got ourselves in a great position. We just wasn't our day, unfortunately.
That one hurts me. I can see you struggling with that one. There's those games that hurt, mate. They never go away.
That's it. That's right. You know, like, it just, you know, ultimately, when I look back on it, it ended up being my last sort of game as captain for Palace. And it was just like, oh, it would have been nice. It would have been a nice way to sort of to cap it all off. But it wasn't meant to be. And like I said, you move on, you move forward.
Probably the thing that's remembered about that final more than anything is Alan Pardew's little dance when you scored. He must have got some grief for that, I would imagine.
I keep hearing about it today. There you go. There's the grief. It still gets remembered and spoken about. But
it's a tough one for you, though, I can see. Let's move on then, because you did leave Crystal Palace to join Aston Villa, who, of course, had just been relegated from the Premier League. And that first season, you mentioned your first season at Palace was tough. First season at Villa was tough as well.
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, huge club, huge ambitions, and trying to turn around a sort of different environment, new owner, turnaround of players, you know, dressing room a little bit indifferent. Tricky, underestimating championship level people, you know, it was all a learning for everybody there. And, you know, again, managers and staffing changes, and yeah, it was a proper experience, a real proper experience.
Did you sense the difference between Palace and Villa? With the greatest respect, Palace are a big club, but Villa are a slightly different level. Did you feel that weight of expectation a lot more at Villa Park?
Well, I knew it the first time I played at Villa Park. It was the one stadium, you know, I said this, it was the one stadium that, obviously, the ones that you hear and see, the big six, you know, we shouldn't name them, but yeah, those stadiums a bit more, because you had seen them on TV. But when I played at Villa Park for the first time, we played on I think it was a Boxing Day one year, the year we went up, and I was blown away. Just obviously an older stadium, but so big, and I was just like, wow, what an atmosphere this could be. It's unbelievable. Got a huge tradition, and again, that comes with expectation. And you know, you are all know football enough to know that when things haven't gone well, it doesn't take for people to start getting on top of that. And you know, the voices are known. You know, the frustration's known throughout. So you've got to be able to handle that. And it came with its struggles, that's for sure, in terms of us that season, for sure.
You ended up having three seasons playing with Villa. The second season, you did get back to Wembley, but lost to Fulham, but finally got up in your last season, defeating Derby County 2-1. But you were an unused sub in that final, a bit of a frustrating final year. And I think you were played at centre-back as well for half that season.
Yeah, I played most of my time there at centre-back. Steve was in charge for
Steve Bruce
was in charge, and I guess he trusted me above some of the other people. And yeah, it wasn't my best season by any stretch, but I did, you know, I had a bit of a recharge once Dean came in, and a couple of little niggly injuries and stuff, but got myself back fit and ended up again, as and when, coming on, playing a bit part. But again, my experiences have told me that, you know, you have to keep going, and you have to keep going and being there for everybody else. And it was the ultimate goal with Aston Villa was to get promoted while I was there. So being a part of that and subsequently not playing part in the Premier League season the following year, last year, makes me appreciate, you know, what a job and what a task I was a part of.
Yeah, did you enjoy playing centre back, Millay?
I did. It come with its thing, but again, Maury would be able to tell you it's not the easiest position to, when you've been playing as a central midfielder your whole career, and you know, you're afforded every now and then a few mistakes. The mistakes, they get punished at any level, probably at the championship prem, they get punished, and a few times, you know, they would have got punished.
Oh, what? Stoppers have got it difficult. Kick everything that's in front of you, and then if the ball goes at the back behind you, make sure the keeper comes out. You've got it hard. Please.
Right, but the difference is, to be fair, McTominay's been used in that position for Scotland, but when you're used to being a midfielder, Mila, you know what it's like. You can go and win the ball, know that you've got a little bit of support behind you. But as I said, as a half, it's different.
That's probably the thing. I think, to be honest, even just the top types of movements and stuff, you know, that, you know, being ready to go both ways. I know that happens in midfield, but midfield, you've got that 360. You have to be ready to go any which direction. You know, you're looking at it. You've always got voices behind you telling you what to do. Whereas, you know, sometimes you play and, I mean, like it or not, people don't talk. Some people don't communicate. And that's just the way it is. And you've got to sort of find your way. And it gets like that, even at the very top, it can get like that. And, you know, I'm not going to, like I said, it's all learning. It's all experiences and stuff that I, you know, had to learn on the job.
We mentioned that you had that last season at Villa, which was a little bit frustrating. Were you ready to retire at the end of that season? Was the body starting to complain a bit? Was it something mental? Was it a combination of both?
No, it wasn't. I was continuing to try and play right up until the point. When did I decide? It was like we went into lockdown in March last year. And I probably, you know, I was still sort of ticking over and doing bits and pieces, but it don't get any easier when you haven't played. It's not something that, I mean, you know, the boys will know, the older you get, you know, if you're not in that consistent routine all the time, it's tricky. And then it's about what opportunity do you want? Where do you want the opportunity to go? And, you know, ultimately I came to the conclusion that, you know, it's time for something else. Could I have handled playing more? Yeah, I probably could have. The body wasn't too knackered. But again, it's like, well, it's time for something else.
Let's talk about your international career before we move on to some Twitter questions. Your Socceroos debut came under Pim Verbeek. I think a lot of people forget this, that you played in the infamous 4-0 loss to Germany in 2010, alongside a certain Craig Moore as well. What are your memories of that first World Cup?
Well, I came on at 4-0 and 10 men. So, cheers for, you know, I had to do the running around. I think I might have kicked a couple, but
it was job done.
It was a great sort of, you're thrown into it again, sort of thrown into it. Let's see what you got, young fella, and try and make your way. And they were the only minutes I got that World Cup, which was again, as someone very new into that setup, was for me was a great experience. One I look back on very fondly, and probably I think anyone who was a part of that would see it as probably an opportunity missed from us in trying to progress.
Did you feel as though that team got a little bit too much grief because of that game against Germany? You ended up, you know, going on to beat Serbia in the last game, which in my opinion, I think a lot of people's opinion, it's still the nation's best ever results at a World Cup. And you were that close to going through, only going out on goal difference.
Yeah, I mean, look, there was obviously, you know, the whole gun, it just went against us. Like, it was just, the 4-0 didn't help.
Ending off for Harry against Ghana.
And then the handball for Harry against Ghana. Wilco goes through one-on-one and gets it saved as well at the end of that game. And you're just thinking, oh, it's not going to be ours. It's not going to be ours. But it was I remember the lead up to it, and, you know, sort of finding my way within the group and this environment and set up. And you just, but then, like I said, we didn't know, again, the first game was a bit strange because we had people playing in different positions and stuff. So that was all, yeah, we had to juggle all that as well, I suppose.
I remember, Mila, I remember saying the chippers in that Germany game. We were getting beat 4-0. I looked up at the clock and it was like 60-odd minutes, and I'm like, this could be 7 or 8. And he's bombing on, leave me exposed to the centre-half. Right? I'm going, chippers, can't you stay in home? He goes, mate, we can get one. Mate, we're not at home.
Oh, dear. Miller, you did have some brilliant moments in the green and gold, though, aside of that 2010 World Cup. Got to the 2011 Asian Cup final. And then, of course, 4 years later on, you lead the team to victory over South Korea in Sydney. Is that your proudest moment as a player?
Yeah, it's up there. I think it's one of the ones that stands out. Again, in different tournament, in terms of I had this ankle niggle, and oh, not ankle niggle, I wouldn't call it a niggle. I was playing on one leg for the last few games, but yeah, it was a massive thing. I think we didn't want to let anybody down. I had about 80 odd people in the crowd, and it was what a fantastic atmosphere. I think the tournament as a whole was just, again, you know, you don't want to bring it up because, you know, subsequently we haven't really done anything since then, but what a great spectacle it was for our country and to put that on, but just to see how much passion, supporters and everyone was getting behind it. And to me, that's what I really, really enjoyed, as much as being in it. When I was away from it for a couple of games, I got to see a little bit more of that. I had a bit more time to, whilst getting treatment, I could watch some of these other games and stuff. So you got a real sense of what it was about. And it was, again, super, super huge part of that.
I actually thought, Mila, after we won the Asian Championship there, I actually thought we'd go on and dominate Asian football. And we sort of, I don't know how you feel, I sort of think we took it for granted. Because yous were excellent to win it. I mean, mate, it was a fantastic performance. And I just thought, Australia, now we're just going to build, grow, and we're just going to be dominant in Asia. And we haven't.
Yeah, I think that part of that is we probably haven't progressed and they've got better as well. Traveling away to some of these places in wherever. I mean, we've had a few places where we haven't got results, and you know, it is what it is. Like I said, I think it's where it's at the moment, and you know, it's going to be tricky still to qualify for this World Cup. Make you know, I still believe that, but hopefully they can get it over the line.
Ange Postecoglou, of course, the coach of the team in 2015. what made that team so good? Was Ange the key component in that? I know you had good players, obviously, but you seem to be very, very well led and play a style of football that the players appeared, at least on the surface, to enjoy playing. Is that fair?
Yeah, I mean, listen, you know, boys, we all loved playing in that way. We all, you know, I think it was backed by the belief that everybody had, and the belief, that belief grew obviously in time, but Ange and all his staff believed, backed us, and they backed us all the way. And you know, it was always, we had to learn the hard way sometimes, which was unfortunate. You know, you make mistakes and sometimes you take things a little bit literally, but we got it right in time for that, obviously, Asian Cup tournament, and then subsequently in, you know, by thread in for that World Cup qualifying campaign as well.
Of course, you scored a hat-trick in that qualifier against Honduras, which got Australia to the World Cup in 2018. The furore that surrounded Ange Postecoglou and his subsequent resignation from the job ahead of the World Cup, how difficult and how confusing was that for you as players, and you in particular as captain? Because obviously many was the time that you would have to go out and front the media on all this sort of stuff.
Yeah, well, obviously when it all dropped, we, you know, you found out then and there. We didn't know beforehand anything. I think obviously there was talk about it and whatnot. I hadn't been involved in the previous couple of qualifiers because I was coming back from an injury. I had a surgery and was coming back, so I didn't play in the last few qualifiers and the Syria game. So I was in a sort of race against the clock to try and get back because I wanted to get back, obviously, and play and be a part of it again. So I think what helped with me was that focus sort of for myself was, okay, I need to be this way. I need to be like this. I was lucky I had someone the boys will know well, Les Gellis, come over and see me just as he does and looked after me for a week and had a little look around. And it was more just the discussions we had and spending that time and seeing a familiar face, albeit over here. But he was doing his rounds, I think, and he come and spent some time with me. And it was just like, we got to try and get you back sort of thing. And I knew that anyway. And I just thought, okay, I've got to be like this. Cause I hadn't played any football. And I mean, that pitch in Honduras was, if you know anything about adductors and groins, it was the wrong pitch for it. So I was the whole time after that first game, we're getting on these planes and we got this chartered flight and blah, blah, blah. All the time I'm thinking my groins are going to just blow up here. Like they're just going to go. Like I'm thinking what's going on here? Honestly, I was thinking I don't want to fall asleep because I'm going to wake up and it's going to be, and I was like, okay. So I didn't have that. So I was lucky and I was like, okay, cool. So I'm like, oh, this will hit me then when we were in Sydney. So I get to Sydney and we train the first day and I'm like, nah, this isn't right. I'm like, this can't be right. But again, I was just so focused, and when it did hit me, it hit me the day before the game. So the night before the game, I wasn't 100%. I didn't, not in that area, but I just wasn't 100%. I felt a little bit run down. So I woke up and not that it's anything significant, but I was like, okay, I feel a little bit run down. I need to just rest. And then after the game, I was shattered. It was just like, I was like, oh, this is a killer. I'm like, I'm gone here. But again, it's all, you forget about it for that moment. But again, like it's just a combination of everything happening. And, you know, it's come to that, you've got to that ultimate goal of qualifying for a World Cup. But you're just thinking, wow, what a bit of a whirlwind.
How'd I get through it?
I get through it. You did. Milo, let's move on to some Twitter questions. This one from Simon Frary. Did you ever dream you'd be captain of the Socceroos at the World Cup, which of course you did twice? And more importantly, what do you do to keep your beard in that glorious state? Like, I need to know the care routine, says Simon.
Well, you should have. If you had me on last week, it was out here. I've only just got a haircut and a trim since the last 4 months. So I'm glad I didn't. I'm glad I haven't been on like that. Oh, listen, that's. I'm not too. I just, you know, every now and then just get it trimmed and brushed. You know, you brush it or whatever and wash it, whatever. Nothing too serious about that.
Mate, it was good that you got yourself sorted for our podcast, buddy. Good on you, Miller.
Yeah, that's it. And starting the new job and stuff. So, you know, that came into play as well. So,
what about the first part of that question, Miller? Did you ever dream you'd be captain of the Socceroos at the World Cup? Was that something you thought about when you were a kid?
Probably not. I think my dream was just to play for the Socceroos at a World Cup. That was, you know, when that all came about, it was just like, you know, you obviously know you're in that with that group and around that time, you're like, you know, what's going to happen here? There's obviously going to be there's going to be a change of leadership. And, you know, when you're sort of asked to do it, it was, for me, was, you know, very, very important. But, you know, something I never took lightly, something I always tried to do with the best interest of everybody that I was trying to represent.
This one is from Ben Kirkman. I like this question, so we're going to make it our question of the week. $100 Outback Steakhouse voucher coming your way, Ben. What was the leadership attribute you had to work on the most as captain? And do professional clubs provide leadership development or training, or is it something they assume players will naturally have? I think that's a good question.
Yeah, it is.
I think it's something they probably work on. I'm gonna bore you though, because I was picking it up along the way. Fortunate enough to play with some really, really good people, and leaders, not necessarily had to be captains either. And I was fortunate enough to come in the time at the Socceroos when, you know, just after a lot of the big hitters had finished, you know, Spider and the likes and Dukes and, you know, Skokes. I didn't get the opportunity with them, but there were still so many others, and I just thought, wow, this is cool. And then obviously you go again club level and so on and so forth.
This one from Aman. Do you believe Jack Grealish could play for a club like Real Madrid?
Interesting question. Yeah, on talent, absolutely. There's no, I believe he could. Whether or not he does get the opportunity, I don't know. But he could play in any of the clubs within the UK, that's for sure.
Yeah. No, he's a top talent. Top
sure
talent.
Is. This one from Mace. What communication, if any, has there been from Football Australia for you to contribute to the game here? And what, in your opinion, do we have to do to grow as a football community?
I haven't had a lot of conversations, to be honest with you. Tough question. I think I've been a little bit removed from it all. So hard question about what we need to do going forward. I think everybody can agree that it ain't going to be, it's always been tricky. It's always been tricky going forward. So, I like to see, obviously, our game flourish in Australia, and flourish. You want it to be the number one sport, but we also know that that's probably not going to happen for a little while. So, yeah.
Mille, that's frustrating for me to hear that, because, we've seen the situation a lot in Australia. Captain of the World Cup, two World Cups. You know, I know that maybe your future's overseas, but I mean, for the listeners even, that must be so frustrating, because there's a lot that we can learn from you, from your experiences throughout your career, that can be of benefit to the Federation. That's very, very sad to hear.
Yeah, listen, it's not to say that no one's been in contact. I just think as and when, Maury, you know, there might be a time. It might be a time. It doesn't align at the moment anyway. Like I said, I'm always willing to give some support and, like I said, if people want to pick up the phone and ask, not a problem from myself. It's never about that. But yeah, as far as anything formal or anything like that, it's not happening at the moment.
Let's finish off with this one, Milo. This is from Edward Wallace. Lots of players say they were intimidated by Milo on the field. Who were you most intimidated by when playing? It doesn't have to be physically, I guess. Maybe skill-wise.
I don't know.
Who was the razzler?
Someone you couldn't catch the kick.
Who do you want me to name? I remember he felt like it was not a good time for us in the national team when we went to Brazil. And I remember being one-on-one against Neymar, and I thought, where do I have to put you? Like, where can I take you? And I'm just gonna try and hope for the best. But listen, there's been countless players where it's not so much intimidation, but you're like, wow, what special. That World Cup, the one in 2010, that Germany game, Özil, he was just on another level to everybody, and you're just like, wow. It's not so intimidation. It's more admiration after the fact. You know, you obviously want to compete, and you go and compete, and you never sort of take a backward step. But when you stop and you think, and you're like, wow, you know, Luis Suarez is another one that comes to mind. He used to rat around, and like he'd occupy the whole back four. He'd be on the back of you, and just like a proper, you know, just had that intensity, and you're like, wow, this is pretty good. And then, you know, guys who I probably would have come up against. Yaya Toure, always a handful, always would score against us at Palace as well. There's so many.
There's some good players there, Miller, isn't it? I find it funny when people ask you, did you dream of playing for the Socceroos when you were a kid? Mate, you couldn't have dreamt of playing for and captaining your country back then the way we were growing. But now, like, it seems like a massive thing. And that part of playing for the Socceroos and actually achieving what you've achieved actually helped you stamp your authority in Europe as well, because they started to respect Australians as players.
Yeah, they did 100%. And, you know, for myself, I was fortunate enough. It coincided with playing Premier League football my first year and then going to a World Cup in Brazil. So, you know, I remember that. And then I remember after that, when we went and won the Asian Cup, I remember coming back and remember having conversations with players from other teams, just passing by, wishing us like congratulations and stuff. And I just found that like, oh, okay, this is pretty cool. Like what a great amount of respect they've got for us. So, yeah. You know, those stories, you know, players, you know, and you're like, okay, that's pretty cool. If the players are thinking it, then obviously that's filtered down or filtered up to other parts of the football community.
Well, it was respect that was very well earned, Mille. You had a great career. Now, as we say, you're part of the backroom staff at Aston Villa. Might we see you back in Australia as a head coach at some point? Is that on your radar in the future?
Oh, listen, you never say never, I suppose. It's football after all. That's why we love it. There's, you know, opportunities come as and when. And, you know, when they do come, you have to be prepared. But also you got to see if it's the right timing and stuff. But, you know, always going to have a affiliation with the game back home. No doubt about that. Always got one eye on what's happening back home. But, again, it is in the distance while you're over here trying to do your thing as well.
We're going to leave the final question, as ever, every week, to Spider. Off you go, Spider.
Mille, tell us, mate, you've played at some brilliant stadiums. So tell us the best stadium you've ever played at, and tell us your biggest dungeon, because I know you've played at some dungeons as well.
Best stadium would be Wembley.
I was
fortunate. Again, you're talking about, you know, dreams. And the first time I went to Wembley, I came over just before I signed to Palace. I went to a Take That concert, sat in the stands, and I'm like, what is, like, imagine playing here. And I thought, and that was organised by the chairman at the time, because he was trying to, I don't know, he just said you can go and watch. It was with the agent at the time, and I was like, imagine playing. I ended up being involved there 5 times in my career. So that's mental for me, and it was like, wow, that was a good place. Dungeon. Oh, let me think.
Mate, there's some in Turkey. Come on, Millie, there's some in Turkey. I thought you were going to throw out the Honduras one without a shadow of a doubt. I thought you were going to throw Honduras under the bus.
Yeah, Honduras, but you know what about Honduras? I think Honduras wasn't intimidating because the noise, you just love to play in the noise. Yeah. As much as afterwards you found out, you know, what was actually going on, who was carrying what weapons in the stands and whatnot. That was, you know, that you sort of understood. Turkey had some arenas. Yeah, there was some in Turkey where it was probably that stuff where you're going to games. And again, in that relegation year, you're going to play rivals that are fighting relegation and you're getting stuff pelted and you're seeing boys jump on the other side of the bus. And I'm like with my headphones thinking, what's going on here? And they're like, get down, they're throwing you off. And I'm like, oh my God. So yeah, you've got those things. And in the UK, I've been to a few. I've played in some derbies. You know, the Birmingham Villa one was, you know, warming up on the side of St Andrews and getting pelters from some of the fans. It was, you know, it was all good.
Really, absolutely fantastic memories, and we could probably talk for about 4 hours, but we're aware that we should let you go. All that remains is for us to say thanks so much for giving us so much of your time today on the podcast. Really appreciate it, mate.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me. And yeah, just make sure you look after yourselves.
We'll do our
best.
Good
on you, Mille.
Thanks,
mate.
That is Mille Jedinak, former Socceroos skipper. And that is us for this week. Join us again, same time, same place next week for another Shim, Spider and so much more. Bye for now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.